Welcome to the Subscription League, a podcast by Purchasly. Listen to what's working in subscription apps. In each episode, we invite leaders of the app industry who are mastering the subscription model for mobile apps. To learn more about subscriptions, head to subscriptionleague.com. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone. So I'm super excited to welcome Vae Bagdasarian to the show today. He's a senior growth marketing manager at CoinStats. Welcome to the show, Vae.
Hi, Oliver. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And I also have Jeff, co-founder at Purchasly, with us today.
Hi. Very pleased to be here, Olivier and Vae.
Yes. It's always awesome to have you. You know, I like how we're switching co-hosts. It's like we're getting different questions, different angles. It's always nice.
Always a surprise.
Exactly. So, Vae, I was looking at your bio earlier, and you've worked in edtech. Now you're in fintech. And to me, those seems like fairly different, but I'm sure there's a good explanation for your transition. So yeah. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. There are fundamental principles in growth that is the same regardless of your industry, if you're in fintech, edtech, or any other thing. So from the edtech, I'm bringing with me all these fundamental principles and frameworks of growth. And when you combine them with the specification of the fintech at crypto, more especially, it adds up in the end of the day and it works.
Awesome. And so, you know, you've worked in growth in both of those areas, and today you're a mentor at Growth Mentor too. I'm sure, you know, it's a great feeling to help others answering their question, but I'm also sure you've learned a lot by talking to startup founders. Can you tell us a little bit what you've learned from there?
Yeah, so I started at Growth Mentor more than a year ago, I guess, and many people come and share their struggles, and among them are startup founders. Mm-hmm. So people who don't have growth teams or just getting started. They don't have a marketing team and they want to do the first their growth initiatives by themselves. And then if they find their product market fit, they're probably going to hire some marketing person to growth team. And, you know, during the discussions with the startup founders, I'm actually learning a lot from them about entrepreneurship, about starting startup, their struggles, how they manage everything by themselves. So actually it's getting, you know, beneficial both for me and both for them, because they are getting answers from their questions, and I'm getting a lot of information and knowledge about entrepreneurship and how startups work as a foot of a founder.
Yeah, I'm sure the day you decide to create your own startup, you'll have plenty of knowledge around there.
Yeah, maybe.
And so right now you're a senior growth marketing manager at CoinStats, which is a pioneer in the crypto world. And we're recording here, I don't know, a couple months after the whole FTX debacle, but I'm sure that has impacted you guys. Can you tell us how?
Yeah. I mean, FTX collapse was one of the most significant things that happened in crypto last year. And at the end, maybe the most significant of all the events that happened in crypto last year. And it affected all the consumer sentiment of people who are in crypto. They were panicking and wanted to, you know, getting out of the crypto and starting to find other ways to invest, maybe. But the interesting thing was that we had this competitor who was somehow affiliated with FTX. And after the FTX collapse, all the people were using this competitor services, trying to find an alternative. So we started launching some small campaigns to attract these users, onboard them through special promo codes and, you know, special customer support treatments, you know, trying to find the growth opportunities, even if they're in the most dark times of crypto.
Yes, there's always opportunities. So last time we've talked, you've mentioned that one of your big pet peeve when we talk about growth is that people tend to focus mostly on paywall optimization. So there's plenty of other things to think about when you want to optimize a subscription. Can you walk us what you guys have done at CoinStats for this aspect?
Sure. When you talk about, you know, subscription optimization, a lot of people only talk about paywall optimization, but I believe that, you know, paywall optimization is only a small part of this whole monetization model and everything that you can do in monetization. And usually it's not the first thing to start with. And at CoinStats, when we started to change our pricing strategy and or reoptimize our monetization model, we didn't start with paywall optimization. We started with the most early stages of the monetization model to understand what are the use cases of our customers and what are the problems that they are trying to solve with our product and also with our premium features. Mm-hmm. A lot of product teams miss this point. They end up diving into monetization decisions without understanding these elements. And as a result, they are designing a system that is not connected with the customers. Mm-hmm. And they end up getting, worse result or end up getting a model that is not very optimized. And usually we believe that there are actually like four parts of the monetization model that we put a lot of attention when we were starting. There were like the scaling, how the model is going to scale, what features are we going to offer as a premium, what is going to be the price, and when we are going to charge for our premium features. And when we talk about scaling, this is when there are like actually like two ways to scale your monetization. The first is a continuous model. This is the model that most like B2B companies are using. For example, Amplitude, Mixpanel, they start to scale your pricing when you go over the limit that is based on your contract. For example, if you add up, 10 million more events, the price will scale and you're going to pay more for them. Mm-hmm. And there is the other model that there is more common for B2C that is Bandit. And this is what we also end up using. It's like every premium package or every paid package that you offer, there has some limitations, mm-hmm. right? For example, if you are using our free plan at CoinStats, you are allowed to connect up to, five portfolios to manage your funds. And if you decide to connect more, we have this premium plan that it's offered you up to, unlimited amount of number of portfolios to connect. Or if you want to manage less than 1,000 transactions, you're gonna go with our free plan. But if you want to manage up to 1 million transactions, you're gonna go with our premium plan. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the important things to understand. And there is other things like what are the features that your customers are valuing the most, right? And the interesting thing is that people tend to think that all the features are created equal, but it's not. And all your users value the same feature in the same way. But in the end of the day, you have multiple use cases, and each use case value your features differently. For example, maybe there is this use case one that value the feature X more, and there is this use case two that value the feature Y more. And you gotta understand these differences before doing your packagings and starting moving forward. And also, the willingness to pay is different. Willingness to pay for all the for all your products and for your all your features and all your use cases is different. So this is like the fundamentals to understand before moving forward and trying to go on.
And so how do you dig in there? How do you go about understanding those?
I mean, for feature benefit analysis, we were using this Max Stiff principle of survey. There is originally, if I'm not mistaken, presented by Reforge. This helps you to understand what are the features that your customers value the most. Mm-hmm. And you're going to use this, the most valued features, to show it on your paywalls, pricing pages. And you can also take the least valuable things, these optimum valuable things, and present it in your freemium plan. Because if you are a company that is working with a freemium model, you should understand what to put in a freemium model and what to put in the premium plan. So this kind of helps you to understand the position of your product or your features, mm-hmm. and use the best ones in your promoting your premium plan and some least ones in your freemium plan or other places. And the other thing when it comes to this, after when you understand this feature benefit analysis, it's also important to understand the willingness to pay of your customers. Mm-hmm. And there are usually a few principles that do the doing this. The most famous is the one vester drop that the most of companies did, and we also did. But there are also some companies but also doing some conjoint analysis or live testing that are more sophisticated. But I guess the go-to choice for the most growth professionals is this one vester drop principle. And it helps you to understand the optimal point to price your product, so more users will convert and become paid users. And also it gives you some sense to understand how to discount your products. For example, it gives you some lower bond prices, and you can use that lower bond prices as a discount offers for your customers. So, and there is no limitation of, you know, how you can do this. For example, we did this in country based, we did it on OS based. For example, we did this for web users, we did this for iOS users, we did for the people who live in the US and Northern Europe, and also people who live in Asia.
So you mentioned experimenting on pricing. Why is that so important?
Yeah, because to put in simple words, it's going to help you to increase your monetization metrics. But actually, there are a lot of things that you can accomplish with pricing experimentations and, you know, monetization experimentations, and that can help you to improve your revenue significantly. There are many, many tiny things and also big things that a lot of companies and that are getting started, or also if they're already, you know, doing well, but they're getting wrong about pricing and monetization. And there are plenty of room, I believe, for everyone to optimize their monetizations. And it's almost about everything, you know, starting from the price that goes to visuals and the paywalls, etc. So optimizing them is going to help you to increase your revenue and also improve your monetization metrics.
Great. Can we speak a little bit about more precisely of the kind of experiments you've been doing around pricing? Can you share us your feedbacks and experiences?
Yeah, sure. So when we started doing this pricing experiments, we decided to do things that are not going to drive incremental results. So we end up doing, you know, a big testing. For example, when we started testing our pricing, we were experimenting $41.99 versus $199.99. Because most of the people, when they start doing pricing experiments, they do, for example, $41.99 versus $44.99. You know, the difference is really small. And if you even get a significant result, it's not going to help you improve your revenue significantly if you are not Tinder or Netflix, that, you know, even 0.5% change is going to help you to increase your revenue significantly. So we end up doing this big A/B testings, $41.99 versus $119.99. And as a result of more than like 2 months of testing, we end up getting twice more customers signing for $119.99 than $41.99.
That's crazy.
And it was, and we, yeah, when you think about it, it's really crazy, because the price difference is, you know, significant. There are more than 3 times difference in the price.
Well, what would you say, like, was the reason for that? Is that like your product will be perceived in a more, in a different way, like better quality?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, actually, when a customer looks at our competitors in the market, most of the competitors have, you know, more expensive packages than we do. For example, if we charge $119.99, most of our competitors charge at least three times more than we do. And the other thing is, when you price your product low, people tend to see this pricing in the spectrum, right? So they see if your product is $41.99, they start to compare it with other product that it's in that spectrum. And unfortunately, these days there are, you know, a lot of apps there. They're position themselves as cheap, but in the end of the day, they try to do scams. And maybe when people see the cheap prices, they tend to, you know, think that this could be not good or something like that. But I guess the main reason might be that most of the products in crypto are expensive. And when you see the product that is not as expensive as the others, you tend to be suspicious.
Yeah, it's also maybe a population that is more willing to pay a little more for a better quality of service.
Yes. And if you think about our customers, most of them have higher willingness to pay compared to other industries, because these are folks who are doing investments, they're traders, and for a good services, they are ready to pay more.
Great. And have you made experiences of the subscription length? I mean, on the initial and basic subscription length, from monthly to 3 months, for example. Did you do any kind of experiments?
No, actually, we only experimented with, you know, two types of subscriptions, like monthly and annually, but we tended to push the annual hard, so get users to sign up for annual. But for the most enthusiastic folks, we also offered lifetime subscriptions. That is, you know, five times their annual, our annual price. And some people, they're in this trading, et cetera, more significantly, they tend to purchase lifetime subscription instead of monthly or annually.
And did you have any other like noteworthy findings through those experiences? Like you found that you could raise the price considerably. Is there any other thing you found out?
No, actually, we don't plan to raise our price at this moment. But maybe in the future, we decide to do some other experiments. But at this moment, we are not doing any, you know, experimenting around the price of the product.
Okay. And in terms of revenues, are there countries or regions that are driving most of the revenue for Coinstat?
Yeah, when we're changing our monetization model, we actually adopted the location-based model. So, but even before that, our most revenue came from United States, Canada, and the northern part of the Europe. Mm-hmm. And we saw there an opportunity to optimize pricing for the countries that have low purchasing power. So we end up adopting this location-based pricing and offered more comfortable prices for the folks who lives in the countries that has a low purchasing power, but also are enthusiastic in the crypto. And there are some beginner traders and they want to, you know, start managing their funds. And yeah, from there, we, you know, set up our prices for the regions and yeah, started doing other things.
And so how do you set those prices per region, actually? Because A, there's so many. And B, I'm curious, like, what process you use to get to the prices?
Yeah, sure. So the first of all, you know, we divided like location into these brackets, group them, cluster them, and divide into brackets. So we end up having five groups of locations, and we end up getting them based on our revenue analysis. So we saw, well, for example, we saw that the most part of the revenue is coming from United States, Northern Europe, a few other countries, that this is a group A. The other part of revenue is coming from Eastern Europe plus, you know, Russia, et cetera, that is group two, et cetera. And after that, we started doing this one Western drop analysis to understand the willingness to pay per region. And that's how we end up getting the location-based prices.
And so it sounds like, you know, a fair amount of investment on your team's side to optimize those regions, I guess. And I'm sure there's some regions that represent very small revenue. Like, is there a big benefit in doing that price discrimination by region, I guess?
Yeah. So actually, when we look before, there are some countries where we're getting not a lot of, you know, revenue. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly the Eastern Europe countries because maybe our price. And when we were adopted this location-based pricing and put a price there that it's more convenient people to use, they end up paying more. So if before we're getting the 1% of our revenue from Eastern Europe, now we're getting like 2% of the revenue, 3% of the revenue from Eastern Europe. So if you are, you know, location-based pricing becomes heavy when you scale it. For example, if you tend to do a lot of price experimentation around the location-based pricing, you need to have a big infrastructure to manage everything because there are several things going on the same time in different places, and you need to have a proper infrastructure to manage all your experimentations and analyze them. But now we don't do a lot of things around this location-based pricing. We only set it different prices per region. Maybe at some point in the future, we start to see that it's some location that has a potential, and then we dive in there more and start to do more things to convert more people to our paid services.
Well, we've been discussing a lot about price testing, but the limit between price testing and price discrimination is very thin. And price discrimination is becoming a big thing. Tinder announced last year that they were moving out of this practice. We also know that the app stores and Google Play stores are really looking at this kind of practices, and even some local laws and in Europe or in the US maybe are forbidding some of these practices or framing some of these practices. Going down that way, what should one be careful of?
The first thing is I would advise to look at the local legislation where you want to start this price discriminations or pricing testing. For example, as much as I know, in the EU, it's forbidden to do price discrimination. And it's not if you can't price your product, you know, an X price in France and Y price in Germany, if it's the same thing. And there are many, many other, you know, countries that they have their local legislation for price discriminations or pricing testing. So first thing should be talk to the legal team and look at the legislation. The other thing is the most common thing that you can do is have just different prices on your mobile and web. Many, many companies having more cheaper prices on web to help users to convert web and to avoid from this 15 or 30% commission fee that Apple charges. For example, if the product is like $50 on mobile, they offer 40 if you buy it on, you know, web. So
once again, that breaks one of the most common app store laws, where the product should be sold at the same price no matter the mean or no matter where you're purchasing it from.
You're totally right, but I believe, you know, the line between what it's illegal and what it's tolerated to do is very, very thin. And as long as you don't do it based on people's income or their gender or race, etc., these are the things that are forbidden by all the laws. But if you skip this part and there's the line that is very, very tiny between what is illegal and price discrimination and where is the opportunity to do price testings.
And I think at the end of the day, it's the difference between the law and the contract that you sign with Apple. I guess you risk rejection from the App Store.
And then navigating between these two can be a nightmare.
They can make your life hell, but they won't send you to jail. So you've already done a lot of optimization at CoinStat. Like, what is next for you guys?
Yeah, we are currently, you know, exploring some behavioral science frameworks and cognitive biases, applications of cognitive biases that helps some companies to improve their metrics. There are some and optimize their frameworks, increase their optimize their metrics, etc. And there are many, many, you know, cognitive biases that are involved in making a purchase. Some of them is the confirmation bias, sunk cost fallacy, and, you know, the endowment effect.
Tell us what they are for people who don't know them.
Yeah, sure. So I'm just starting in this behavioral science thing, doing my research and exploring the things there. But as I feel, one of the best things that we are currently exploring is this confirmation bias. The confirmation bias is the tendency to search for, interpret, and recall any information, search for a social proof that confirms or supports their belief and supports their tendency to purchase. For example, if somebody wants to do a $120 purchase, they tend to look for some social proofs or look at something that's going to say them, you are doing right, go for it. And we are trying to have this confirmation bias element in our paywalls, in our landing pages to support our users. For example, we are putting reviews about our products from the key opinion leaders in crypto. There is extensive reviews that explain the benefits of the CoinStats. We are putting media mentions about CoinStats from a few of the most notable media outlets in the crypto, and, you know, experimenting with different things to help users to, you know, make sure that they are doing the right decision. We are also, in some cases, we are also offering them refunds. You have, you know, for 2 weeks to apply for a refund. You know, we are just getting started, and we'll see the results in the future.
Yeah. I'm curious because you mentioned the sunk cost fallacy, and this one is one of my favorite. I'm curious to see what you thought, how to use it in subscription optimization, if you've already put some thought into it.
No, actually, we didn't, you know, started to using it. We are now more focused on this confirmation bias, but also doing a lot of research to understand how the sunk cost fallacy actually works. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of folks doing this, capitalizing on this, but we didn't start yet.
Yeah. And you know, for those who listen, the sunk cost fallacy is essentially if you buy a ticket to a concert for $150 and then the day of the concert, there's something else that you value more than going to the concert, you should just forgo the cost of the concert and go to the thing you actually want to go because you already paid for it. So that money is gone. It's something that I found very interesting when I first heard about it at university.
Yes, yes.
So you brought a lot of, you know, great value on the podcast. If people want to learn more about you and what you have to say about subscription optimization, where can they go?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter and LinkedIn. And I'm soon launching a subscription optimization pricing strategy course on Maven. So there is a waitlist open at this moment. I plan to start the course maybe by the end of the February. It's going to be one-week intensive course, seminars, and office hours about subscription optimization and paywall strategy. And it's not going to be only about paywall optimization. It's going to be it's going to start about, you know, it's defining your monetization model and all the down to creating lifecycle marketing campaigns that will support your subscription model.
All right, awesome. Make sure to send us the link so we can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. It was so great to have you on the podcast. You had some great answers to our questions. So thanks again.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. I hope I contributed something good to your audience.
Sure did.
Thank you.
On behalf of the Purchasly team, thank you for listening to the Subscription League podcast. If you've enjoyed what you heard, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or other audio platform. To find out more about Purchasly and how we can improve your subscription business, visit purchasly.com. Please hit subscribe in your podcast player and don't miss any future episodes. You can also listen to previous episodes at subscriptionleague.com. See you soon!